The Place to Be podcast is now a proud member of the History of WWE.com website. The History of WWE.com features thousands of complete cards and detailed results from throughout wrestling history from multiple major promotions, in addition to outstanding columns and reviews. It is now also the official home of the Place to Be podcast and Scott and Justin's pay-per-view reviews. Visit us at thehistoryofwwe.com or on Facebook by searching for the Place to Be podcast or the History of WWE, because the place to be is now the History of WWE.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer? The billiard room?
No.
The billiard? Not billiards. It was... Come on, everybody. What? Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes. It's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can...
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling. Ugh.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this?
Yeah.
Because I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts... Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the Place to Be podcast, and we're mixing things up this week, so we're breaking out the keys early here on a Monday night to bring you another tremendous Vintage Vault episode. And of course, joining me as always is the Master Puppeteer on the Stage of Dreams. Is that what it is? I always get it screwed up. My PIC, no, Scott Criscolo.
No, it's Master Puppeteer on the Stage of Fools.
Okay. Oh, Stage of Fools, I knew it was something.
All the ones you could ever not remember, that's like your favorite quote of the last 7 years.
I know. I fucked it all up. It was a long weekend. I was going to try and do some kind of age thing with the 25 or 64, but I couldn't come up with anything. So,
good evening, Mr. Rosero. It's a pleasure as always, sir.
Yes, it is. So,
and we're live. We're kicking. We'll get more into our weekend foray either later on or on our next podcast later in the week.
Yeah,
we'll get more into the big event. We won't talk about it tonight. We got a lot to talk about. So, it was a day to remember. That's for sure. We'll talk more about it later in the week on our next podcast. But tonight, a little earlier in the week, we're giving our fans a little early treat. Usually we make them wait a few days before cracking open the safe, but we decided to be a little generous. You know, it's a great Friday night here in the Northeast. The Bruins with a big lead in Game 3. We have our
Monday
tough
night.
Enough
Friday night. I wish it was Friday.
Yeah, that's true. Because Friday night we were getting ready for the weekend. That's true. Monday night. My apologies. Monday night. Bruins have a big lead in Game 3. The tough enough winner was announced. We'll talk more about that on our next podcast. But I have opened the door, and as Justin mentioned, it is the Vintage Vault. And this time around, we complete the calendar year and the last pay-per-view of the 1980s. And tonight, it is the 1989 Survivor Series.
Yo, Hulkamaniacs, it's Thanksgiving night, and this is the happiest time of year for all the maniacs, brother. You know, me and all my little Hulksters, we got a lot of things to be thankful for. Number one, we're thankful for being happy and very healthy. We're thankful for having time to share with our loved ones. We're also thankful that Hulkamania is still the strongest force in the universe. And after the turkey's done, after the blessings are all done, I can tell you what the Hulksters mostly happy about. It's Survivor Series time, and I'm thankful for my team of Hulkamaniacs. I'm thankful because I'm rich and you're not.
I'm thankful for having Damien and the DDT.
You know what we're thankful for? We don't have to fight each other.
Oh, yeah. I am thankful that I am the only man worthy of being the Macho King.
I'm thankful for the privilege of living right here in the good old U.S. of A. Tough guy. I'm thankful I've got the big earthquake on my side.
What I'm thankful for Thanksgiving? For my polka dots.
I'm thankful for the judges I serve. I'm thankful for wrestling, cutting, and strutting.
I'm thankful for my good looks.
I'm thankful for having the most ravishing body in the WWF.
I'm thankful because I ain't Ricky Rude.
I am thankful for being the world's smartest man.
I'm thankful for being absolutely perfect.
Yeah, we're thankful for having Sonny Stuffing and El Turkey tonight!
I'm thankful for spending Thanksgiving with all the members of the Heenan family.
Thanksgiving every day, but especially this day, as the Warriors give me the intensity to deliver the pair at Survivor Series, it is going to be a war!
I'm thankful for my polka dots, baby.
That's probably the stupidest one of the bunch. Either that or whatever the hell the Ultimate Warrior just said. I'm thankful for insert group of nouns and verbs here. Whatever God's name he was saying. That was tremendous.
Yeah, of course, that is one of the best pay-per-view opens ever.
Yes, right? That probably is one of the more memorable pay-per-view opens in WWF/E history. All right. Let us set the stage. The date is November 23rd, 1989. Live from Vince's second home in the Windy City. That is the Rosemont Horizon in suburban. They always say suburban because it's not exactly Chicago. Suburban Chicago, Illinois. 15,924 on Thanksgiving night. The buy rate, 3.3. We're not going to get to the whole formula. We talk about it every time. But 3.3 isn't bad for a Thanksgiving night for that time of year and that time of history. And, of course, in your comfy seats, Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse the Body Ventura. Does Jesse have the hat on this time?
Yes.
He does have the hat on. I figured as much. We don't have much in the way of pre-show fun facts. Really nothing specific. They stopped the whole NWA, WWF show battle nights. They were done with that at WrestleMania 5, so we don't have to worry about that anymore. NWA/WCW, they're pretty much WCW by now. I don't think they were actually calling themselves that totally yet. I think they were still kind of half and half, but by now...
Yeah, I forget. It was around here somewhere.
Yeah, by now, Starrcade was in December, so we don't have to worry about that anymore. We have five matches on the card. As usual, we'll go back and forth. I'm going to let Justin do the odds tonight because his team with his guy is in the opener, so I'm going to let him wax nostalgic for this first match. But five matches on the card. And let's just say that once we get to the first of the double main events, usually Mr. Rosero is one of the more apologetic of the early pay-per-view era, as am I. But let's just say you will not be hearing that this evening. But we'll get to that in a moment. Sir, why don't we open up the door? What is our opener tonight in Rosemont?
Our opener is a team that's correctly entitled the Dream Team, because it's pretty much one of my dream teams. And that is my man, Dusty Rhodes. Brutus the Barber Beefcake, of course, as I've mentioned, one of my early favorites growing up. Tito Santana, that loser, the Red Rooster. So now, also to mention, of course, this is the first year we have teams of four. So the first 2 years we had four matches, teams of five. Now we have five matches, teams of four. Mm-hmm. And they are facing the Enforcers. This is also the first year we have team names, too. And that's the Big Boss Man is the captain. Bad News Brown, Rick Martel, and the Honky Tonk Man. So a lot of good interconnecting feuds here. Going on. We'll hit a couple fun facts first, and then we'll run down the eliminations, and then we'll talk about the match. Mm-hmm. So we have a replacement here. Akeem, obviously, was supposed to be on this in this match, which would make it really even more tremendous for me. But he was obviously, you know, still teaming with the Boss Man here, so he could not make the show, so Bad News Brown was put in at the last minute here as a replacement for him. Also, we have a little bit of a backstory between the two captains of this team. That's Dusty Rhodes and the Big Boss Man. On July 22nd, Dusty Rhodes came down and stole the Big Boss Man's nightstick from Slick to prevent him from beating up a jobber with it after he won a match. Boss Man tried to get it back, but Dusty beat him up with a stick and took off with it. So, over the ensuing fall, Dusty was wearing the hat and the nightstick, and I believe he has it here, too. So, just kind of parading around with Boss Man's things, and Boss Man was looking for revenge. Also, during this match, an enthusiastic Dusty Rhodes fan was shown in the crowd. Gorilla even mentions it, what a big fan she looks like. And, of course, that fan would eventually become his manager, but we'll get to that at our next review. So, just a little kind of a fun fact tidbit there. So, I'm going to go ahead and read the eliminations, and then we'll talk about the match. First elimination, Rick Martel got some revenge on his Strikeforce buddy Tito Santana, 9-14. For the second straight year, Bad News Brown walks out of the match at 15:26 to even up things. Beefcake then pins Honky and Rick Martel back-to-back, so Boss Man was alone against three guys. Takes out the Rooster at 20:56, and then Dusty would get the win at 21:58, and him and Beefcake would be the sole survivors. Of course, after the match, Boss Man beats the crap out of Dusty, ties him to the rope with the handcuffs, and beats him with a nightstick to get some revenge there. So that kind of lays the story of the match. Now, Scott, what did you think of the match itself?
The match itself is it's nothing spectacular. I mean, you've got good workers in the ring. Obviously, Dusty is the centerpiece character in the match because obviously he's kind of brand new. I understand obviously the Martel Tito dynamic here, but I still don't understand what the deal was. I know, you know, Tito's a good soldier and all, but you would think that they would at least give him a pin here after Martel's team won the tag match at SummerSlam. You would think at least they'd give Tito the win here.
I think they just have bigger things planned for Martel, and I think that also Tito is expendable by this point.
Yeah, so Martel gets the pin to open. Bad News does, is this the second straight year? Yes, consecutive year that he walks out on his team because he's just not a team player. And obviously Beefcake, always over, gets two straight pins, so that, he deserved that. And then Boss Man, pretty much pins Red Rooster, which no one's surprised about. And then Rhodes gets the big pin at the end. The combinations make sense. You know, in 88, we thought that some of the teams were a little mumble jumbled and kind of didn't make much logical sense. But here, it definitely did. The match as a whole is pretty good.
And just to comment, Tito and Martel did fight on the September 21st. October 14th. It was taped September 21st. Saturday night's main event. And they had the Survivor Series teams out there with them, of course, but it was Akeem instead of the Bad News Brown. But that went to a double DQ, as usual with those matches. Everyone piled into the ring and got into a big brawl. So
exactly. And obviously, we still can't figure out why Akeem was not there.
Yeah, it just seemed like he just couldn't make it. And also to cap this off, on the November 25th, Saturday Night's Main Event, so that was 2 days after this show, they capped off the Dusty Boss Man feud. Dusty defeated him at 4:47, so.
Okay. But overall, I thought the match was fine. Nothing offensive. Crowd was pretty hot. Not much more to say. I'm glad Dusty got the win. At the time, I was not the biggest, I thought Dusty was kind of being demeaned a bit because I was used to the NWA Dusty, and that's why I enjoy talking about this Dusty Rhodes stretch in WWF, because you were one of the few fans who started to get into wrestling and got into him at this point. So you knew nothing about, the previous, 19 years he was in the business or whatever before then. And you became a fan of this character, which is actually pretty funny because obviously as you've become a more schooled fan as we both are, you've obviously come to appreciate his full career, but it's funny how you jumped on his bandwagon when you first became a fan at a time when his character was pretty much a rib in essence. But overall, good match. I enjoyed the opener. I thought it was, good energy. Crowd was pretty hot. Nothing offensive. I liked it.
I always liked this match. And this is actually a tape that I rented a lot as a kid. This is one of the handful that I was always heavy in my rotation. So I had seen this thing dozens of times probably as a child and growing up. And it was actually one of the first ones I had on tape as well myself, that because my cousin started kind of renting and dubbing tapes as well. So this is one of the first ones he did for me. So I definitely wore this tape out. I had it pretty well memorized. And I always like the opener. I like everyone in it. Obviously I was sad about Akeem, but what can you do?
Yes.
Rooster is on his way out. He's at the Rumble, so we'll kind of eulogize him there. But as far as this goes, he's pretty much done. He had his moment early in the year. Here, he's just kind of hanging around as a low card face, but Honky, another guy, just hanging around, as we always say, doing the job. So it's funny, the heel team has some cachet name-wise, but performance-wise, there's really not much there. Like, Martel, we said he beats Tito, but then Beefcake pins him, and Beefcake was being set up for a major run in 1990, which we'll chronicle over our next couple shows. So it makes sense that they made him look strong with two wins, and then being the sole survivor along with Dusty, so... good opener. Like you said, I thought it did a good job getting the crowd going. 21 minutes was pretty fast paced. They don't really slow down much. Boss Man still had some good heat here as well. So, coming off the stuff with Hogan, And actually, I wanted to play a little clip here. He cuts a tremendous promo after he beats up Rhodes and heads to the back. And so this is Boss Man and Slick with Sean Mooney.
Just a deplorable scene. Big Boss Man, how do you justify what you just did in the ring?
Deplorable, boy! The man's a thief, and he's scum! He's a prisoner of the state now! He's my prisoner! When you're a prisoner of the Big Boss Man, you forfeit all rights as a human being! All he did is get what he deserves, and it's just the beginning! He's gonna feel a lot more from the Big Boss Man! You can guarantee it! Believe me, my man just showed what kind of man he is! Look what odds he went against! Three men against one, and he nearly took it off! Brother, I'm so proud!
I didn't take
it
off!
I know what to do! And Dusty Rhodes, you just got the worst beating in your big, fat life! How's it feel, boy? Justice has been served, and it will be served more! You can count on it, you stupid puke!
I can see it's very clear here. The Big Boss Man feeling absolutely no remorse for what he's just done in the ring.
Don't worry, boy. I'll do the same to you if you break the law with me. You hear me, boy? He stole from me and he got what he deserved.
Big Boss Man will sleep well tonight. Let's go to...
You just got the worst beating of your big fat life. Maybe one of the greatest slick lines of all time.
Yes. And it's funny how sooner after this show, the Boss Man's character evolved very differently. Because that was a great and excellent heel promo by an awesome character.
Yeah, very nasty.
Now, as I've been doing, and actually we both have been doing throughout our anthology here of our pay-per-views, we try to let you know where you can find matches. And I used to try and guess, which I'm usually pretty good on, but not all the time. But I'm so silly. Of course, we're going to use the tremendous The History of WWE.com site, because our good friend Graham Cawthon does put on the pay-per-view results where you can find the matches. Mm-hmm. This is tough, though, because there's only one match on this card that's on a DVD, and that's this one. This one is on Dusty's DVD, The American Dream.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
Yes, the
that.
Dusty Rhodes story. Yes, it is. It's on Dusty's DVD. This is the only, I might as well just say it now, this is the only match on this show that is on a DVD. So if you want to see the rest of the show, you're going to have to find the show somewhere. I have my copy, is one guy that dubbed that I won on eBay. So it's actually the actual pay per view copy of this show.
Now, the only thing with Dusty, though, that DVD does not have Jesse, as we mentioned at SummerSlam. So
right.
that kind of hurts the quality of what, you know, I'd almost rather watch the tape just to have, you know, Jesse's commentary throughout it.
So. Exactly. So for this show, you're probably better off going on eBay or Amazon and trying to find it. I don't think I can't speak for this. I don't think Justin can, but I don't think the Coliseum copy is clipped because it's not really that long a show.
No.
So there's no
need
for it to be clipped.
I think the clipping is done. Oh, actually, no. WrestleMania 6 has a minor clip, but after that, I think everything was pretty much in full.
Yeah, the opener of 6 we've talked about on our written reviews, and when we get, of course, to that one, we'll clarify it, but one of the matches is slightly tweaked. Not butchered, but slightly tweaked. So there's the opener, and again, if you have the Dusty Rhodes DVD, you can watch it there, but again, without Jesse, it kind of takes... Jesse's not as good on this one as he is on future Dusty Rhodes matches, but yeah, without Jesse, you kind of lose its sizzle. Because trying to listen to Gorilla talk to himself is a little irritating.
Well,
so,
he's not even talking to himself. It's just like halted, you know, cut off talk. So it's even even weirder.
Yeah, it's kind of chopped up and beaten up a little bit. So I recommend, we'll reiterate it at the end, but I recommend we both do finding the show on Amazon or on eBay. eBay might be a better option because people dub it, so it might be cheaper. If you try and get the actual Coliseum copy, you might get fleeced on Amazon, depending who the person is. So. Just recommendation. So that match is on the Dusty Rhodes DVD, and I think that's as far as I see here, it's the only match that's on a recent WWE production. So,
makes sense.
So there you go. Our second match features a fresh heels new character tweak, and that is, of course, God rest his soul. And I got to tell you something, from here on out until we get to, of course, his end, his WWF career, I should say. I don't want to say his end. It will be tough to talk about Randy Savage, of course, because he means so much to us. But this is his debut pay-per-view as the King, Macho King Randy Savage. He defeated Hacksaw Jim Duggan, thank God, on the 925 Superstars to become the King.
It was a pretty decisive beating, too.
Yeah, he beat the crap out. It was tremendous. And that leads to another awesome Superstar segment, which I'll get to in a minute. The King's Court, the team is, again, Macho King Randy Savage, Greg the Hammer Valentine, Dino Bravo, and a newcomer to the scene, making his pay-per-view debut, one of my favorites and certainly one of Justin's favorites, our friend John Tenta, a.k.a. the Canadian Earthquake. And for now, you think, oh, just some fat guy in a blue tights, but oh, Wait till we get to 1990. We will see Mr. Azzaro's crocodile tears soon enough. But in any event, he makes his debut here in this match on the King's Court team. Their opponents are the 4x4s, which is Captain Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Ron Garvin. Yeah, I know. Great
this
team
is your
for me,
team
huh?
right here, yeah.
Yeah, God. Bret Hart, feel bad for him. Another his early time of having to carry teams. And Hercules, who I had no problem with. I only hate half this team. I kind of feel bad. And a weird instance here. This is once again where you start to see the toe dipping in the pool of a Bret Hart solo run, splitting up the Hart Foundation. Yes. Anvil is on another team later on in the show. Bret is here alone with Hercules, Ronnie Garvin, and Jim Duggan against the King's Court. Mm-hmm. We'll do the eliminations in a moment. A couple of fun facts to kick around on the to talk about our new member on the. November 11th, Superstars, Dino Bravo wanted to have a Feats of Strength show and held a push-up contest in the ring. Of course, ever since the 88 Royal Rumble, it has been disputed how strong he really is. The deal was to choose a fan from the crowd to sit on his back while he did push-ups. They chose a very large man named John. Bearded, wore 460 pounds. Bravo actually managed to do some push-ups while with John on his back. The Ultimate Warrior then came out to also participate. As Warrior prepared, John proceeded to slam down on the Warrior's back and squash him. Bravo and John then decimated Warrior and left the ring. John was dubbed Canadian Earthquake and joined up with Bravo and the Hart family. He was not originally scheduled for this match, but was added at the last minute to replace the Widowmaker, Barry Windham, who was out having surgery, still on Vince's happy list. Hmm. Windham had a short run in late 89, but of course never made a pay-per-view appearance, and, you know, of course he...
Yeah, now he left, and I think he was even supposed to be in the Rumble, too, because I remember him being on the back of the box. He left because something happened with his dad did something with an embezzlement scandal or something. And
no,
he
it was not embezzlement. It was counterfeiting.
Okay, yeah. And it was something financial, and he didn't want any heat to come down on Vince. So he asked out. He didn't want to be tied. He wasn't involved in it, but he didn't want it to be tied back to him or to WWF. So
yeah.
He ends up heading back to NWA.
Yeah, he actually took the high road here and kind of made amends with Vince and did the right thing. Yeah, apparently it was if I remember correctly, and I'm sure Graham will help us look it up and fans, listeners, kind of back me up on this if you could. I believe it was a counterfeiting scheme with Blackjack and Barry's brother Kendall Windham. Counterfeiting, money laundering, some type of money scheme. Mm-hmm. I think it was counterfeiting. And then he left and, of course, was replaced by this new behemoth, the Canadian Earthquake. And as much as I love Barry Windham, this was for the better in the long run.
Yeah.
And, of course, the other fun fact, as I mentioned a moment ago, on the September 25th Superstars, Randy Savage rightfully defeated Jim Duggan to become the king of the WWF after the match, which was won via the loaded purse. Otherwise, but Savage really did beat the crap out of him. Savage nailed Duggan three times with the flying elbow, and that was followed by two splashes off the top from Sherry. So Duggan was taken out on a stretcher, and Savage celebrated. Savage would remain the king until his quote-unquote final match, but we'll get to that when we get there.
And now, speaking of Macho Man, I did promise last time that we were going to try and find a promo relating to each show of him. Mm-hmm. So here we go.
Okay.
And the Widowmaker.
Accept the practices you guys are guilty of fighting out of your league. Court. Ooh, are we ready? Him or tell everybody what's happening now. The 4x4 is the name of that team. That just sums up the mentality. They're no match for the King's Court.
Speaking of match, the first time that we met, the odds were a little in their favor. But things are going to change, gentlemen, because we never lose.
I like that.
Yeah, that's good. The world's strongest man.
Excellent, Jim Duggan. I feel sorry for your clowns that you call yourselves the 4x4s. Because dissension doesn't even matter. We're better than you are. Survivor Series, we're the best.
So, good stuff there, as always.
Yes, as always. As always. As always. God rest his soul. And on a side note, a tremendous segment on Superstars. I believe, I'm not going to pull it out now, it's in the other room, but I believe it is the November 30th, might be earlier than that, maybe it's October. There is an episode of Superstars, there is a segment where he is officially coronated as king, probably right after that, so it's probably early October, I would think. And there is a segment where Savage is officially coronated as the king, and he's in the... He's in the ring on a throne, and he is celebrated by every heel on the roster. And the reason this is so great is because if you just look at the untapped talent that is in that ring at that moment, it's amazing. You've got Savage, DiBiase, Rude, Perfect, the Brainbusters. I think Boss Man was in the ring. Akeem probably was in the ring too. Most of Slick's guys, most of Jimmy Hart's guys, just this untapped potential of greatness in the ring all at the same time. It is a sight to behold. It is definitely on Savage's DVD. I think it's disc two, one of the extras. Tremendous promo. And actually, it's a crowning moment because it's the only time in the history of the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase that actually bought something for somebody else.
That's right.
As he bought Savage a beautiful new scepter. So that is a tremendous moment in the history of the Macho King. And it is on Savage's DVD. So just want to point out.
USA! USA! The hair on the back of my neck stands straight up. The blood starts pumping through my heart. The air's in my lungs. I give a big
ho! Yeah, the blood should have been pumping out of your forehead after the purse shot there, boy. The match as a whole is pretty average. The eliminations, let me go through those.
Okay.
Canadian Earthquake pins Hercules about 4 minutes in. Duggan takes out Valentine about 7.5. Bravo pins Garvin. Little over 11 minutes, 11:16. Savage pins Brett at 19:04. We'll get to that in a minute. And then finally, Duggan is counted out because, of course, why wouldn't he get pinned at 20? Yeah, exactly. Duggan is counted out at 20, probably because he wanted to go have some of that ripped turkey that that one of the later teams was about to eat. Counted out at 23:20. So the survivors are Savage, Dino Bravo, and this new guy on the scene, the Canadian Earthquake. Immediately, if you're a rookie and you're the survivor of a survivor match, particularly in the 80s, you were looked at pretty highly. And it is
funny because it's clear here now that, you know, Dino Bravo was a guy that was obviously starting to fade. His major heat was throughout 88 and into early 89. But, he looked to be head of the way of another guy in this match, Greg Valentine and Honky Tonk Man. And, you know, guys that are still serviceable but aren't going to be pushed to any sort of regularity. But Earthquake actually ends up kind of saving his career. And kind of shoots an injection of life into him for the next year and a half because Bravo just kind of ride his coattails through the main event and just kind of reposition himself. It's just kind of like an ancillary player,
right.
Similar to, not to get too much modern so we don't date this, but kind of like Alex Riley to The Miz. That's what Dino Bravo was to Earthquake at this point.
Yes, exactly. And you could tell he was a character that they all really liked and they were all very high on, and obviously he would have a very successful 1990 when we get there. We'll document that. The match overall is good. As usual, I'm pissed off. Duggan again gets away with not having to be pinned, which I just... Why couldn't he have been fired instead of the Iron Sheik? But obviously the key moment...
What are we going to do when he's gone? We're going to lose half our shtick here. We'll find the guy who was closely allied to him throughout all the
shows. I'll have to find a guy in the mid-90s that I despise. I don't know. I can't think of anybody. Obviously, one of the little points of this match is when two guys get in the ring for a very brief moment. I can't even tell you how long. Maybe 4 minutes.
Yeah,
maybe.
About that.
And folks, fans, just close your eyes and just fathom. Two guys in their prime. One guy is not quite in his prime yet. One guy is in his prime. But just imagine Randy Savage and Bret Hart staring each other face to face in the ring. Even Jesse says on camera he gets goosebumps thinking of that kind of matchup.
No, they did.
Wouldn't
fight
we all?
On Saturday Night's Main Event, didn't they, around this time?
I believe they did.
I'm looking for it right now.
Yeah, I know it's on the – I have it very close to me. This Best of Saturday Night's Main Event DVD.
I'm looking on your site, Graham.
Oh, okay.
Don't lump us both in.
I just don't want to change the screen, but – No, it was 2 years earlier.
Oh, all right, it was 87.
November 28th, 87, all Macho right. and Hart. Which actually I remember actually not a bad match. It wasn't in 89. No. Shortly before this show on Saturday's Main Event, they had that best 2 out of 3 falls Rockers Brainbusters that we've talked about. By then Brett was obviously very green and Savage obviously was not. But you just think about that, you realize two things. Number one, how unbelievable a superstar Macho Man was at that point.
Mm-hmm.
For Jesse to even say something so reverent at that moment in time.
Right.
And number two, you just looked at Brett. Even at this point now, it was clear. No doubt. And this is not a knock on Anvil. We love Jimmy Neidhart. But clearly right now, you know Brett's going to be a star. There's just no doubt about it. He looks it. He's got that look. He's a tremendous in-ring talent. He's got a good physique. The fans love him. It was clear, without a shadow of a doubt now. Before this, you were like, I don't know, and then they pull the rug out, and then you don't think about it. But right here, you really start to see, Brett is going to be a superstar on his own. There's no doubt about it. And you saw it first right here. Other than that, the match is pretty basic. Savage's team wins. They had the better heels. The babyface team was really not that great. Sans, Brett. And no knock on Hercules either, but, he's not in the class of...
No, yeah, him and Garvin were just low-card fodder at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Overall, I had nothing against the match, except, of course, again, Duggan gets away with not having to be pinned, which still just aggravates me to no end. And Savage, who is still pretty hot. And I'll tell you something. Maybe I have to amend my opinion, and it's up to you how you want to put it. Maybe his run here was not as lousy as we thought. Maybe we just didn't like the character, but he still was looking pretty good on shows.
No, yeah, he did well. It's just the fact that he kind of, for him to go from main event scene feuding, being world champion, feuding with the champion, he's still winning, but he's not really on the level of maybe he should have been based on his talent. So I think that's more of the problem. And, I like the Macho King run. I don't mind it. I liked him and Sherry during this point. I liked the... purple tights, the little purple tights, because that's the first Macho Man I really knew was the Macho King anyway. So now, now we're closing in on when I started to watch. So these are the guys that I really first learned about. So I always dug the purple tights. I had the action figure that had the purple tights and the crown. So, decent match. Not the best match, but good enough. The Savage Brett thing is clearly the highlight. And I do like watching Savage Quake and Bravo all celebrate. Good little heel triumvirate there. Bravo, once again, obviously. Hanging on to Quake's coattails. Valentine's the only heel that was eliminated. So pretty good stuff. Sherry helped Savage, obviously, cost Duggan the match. So I'm with you. I think Duggan could have easily jobbed here down 3-1. They really should have had a Quake squash him probably to put him over. And then maybe Mach hits the elbow or something like that. But whatever. I mean, no harm in the end. So that's about it for that match. Anything else you got left to say?
No, I got nothing. Again, I'm happy Savage's team won. I'm not happy Duggan didn't get you better have something cued, because the way we motor through these awesome podcasts for our listeners, it's gonna be like another month and a half and you won't be able to play that anymore.
I know.
It's a solid enough match. The heels are hotter and they get the win, so pretty clear. All right, are you ready? Usually I'm the one that's pimped on this board as having the hot temper and the rants, but it's your turn. I'm standing back, and I'm not disagreeing with you when you get to it, but this is your moment, so why don't you intro it? Go ahead.
All right. A lot of vitriol coming on this one. Yeah. Okay. Our next match, kind of an odd spot for our world champion to be in, but he is in the middle of this show, and that is Hulk Hogan, captaining the team of the Hulkamaniacs, along with Jake Roberts, Axe and Smash of Demolition. Pretty heavy gold team here, because Demolition has now regained the tag team titles. They defeated the Brainbusters on November 4th, Superstars, film 10-2. So they are back with gold. And they will face the Million Dollar Team, comprised of Ted DiBiase, Zeus, Warlord, and Barbarian. Of course, the Powers of Pain. So we'll get into the match itself, or the match construction after the show. Because I want to kind of, the way I rebooked this whole show. Because it's very confusing to me, especially someone who was catching up on this period through these tapes, not having anything else, just watching SummerSlam and then Survivor Series and then the Rumble was very confusing as to the layout of these teams.
Right.
But of course, Zeus still kind of lined up with Hogan, and they had big things planned for the end of the year, which we'll get to in a moment. We'll talk about it right now. Why not? The push for No Holds Barred feud was still in high gear, even though the film was out of theaters by this point. Vince was pretty set on making one last payday, so he began promoting a special pay-per-view package deal for December 27th. If you order No Holds Barred the movie on pay-per-view, you'd also get a special tag team cage match between Hulk Hogan and Beefcake taking on Savage and Zeus. The package had an overall buy rate of 1.6, which is pretty good for that period. And then, of course, we'll get to... this is it for Zeus, right? I guess we'll talk about it now. Idea was actually for Zeus to stick around and get a world title shot at WrestleMania, if you believe some of the rumors out there. But things quickly tapered off, and by the No Holds Barred stuff, I think he had run his course. No Holds Barred, the movie, was pretty much run its course, so he ends up kind of fading into obscurity at this point. The movie itself, I thought it was okay.
It's funny. I actually talked to my friend on Facebook that I was good friends with back then, his family. We hung out. We were really tight, and kind of like you and Jim. And he told me we did watch the pay-per-view. we did get it. It snowed here in the Northeast in Connecticut, and I'm sure in Rhode Island it probably did too. And we actually were at his house hanging out, and I stayed over because I couldn't get home, even though I was only a town away. It was a pretty bad snowstorm, he remembers. And we did get the we did buy it. So I think it was only $20.
Yeah, I don't think
15 or $20. It wasn't much. You get the movie, and which he saw in theaters. I didn't. He saw it in the movies. First time I ever saw it was on pay per view. It's been a long time. I barely remember it. I have to watch it again. And then the tag match, which was taped a few. And then I think did they end up doing the match on free TV anyway?
No, it was on, because I've seen it. It's on, I think, Super Tape 4. Okay. I'll check Rampsite so it doesn't yell at us. Go ahead.
Yes. I don't double check and see if it's on a DVD, because I don't think it is. But
no, it's not on DVD.
It's definitely not on DVD.
It is okay. On tape.
By then, Zeus had run his course, but he was rumored to be in the main event at WrestleMania 6 against Hogan. Which obviously probably would have been an unmitigated disaster. So thank God that didn't. We all know what did happen, but we'll talk about it when we get there.
I'm sorry. Still not that one. Go ahead. Keep going.
So the teams are actually pretty damn good. And just to kind of go through the fun facts briefly while Justin's researching, Demolition did end up regaining.
All right, I got it. Super Tape 1, actually. It was the original Super Tape, released March 21st, 1990.
Okay.
Yeah, match is 927, cage match. So there you go.
Okay. So it is on something. Not on a DVD. It is on that. Again, Demolition started their second reign as World Tag Team Champions when they defeated the Brainbusters. And we'll get to them in a minute because they pretty much crashed quickly. Mm-hmm.
Actually, you know what? I didn't do the eliminations. Let me do that quickly.
Yeah, go ahead and do the eliminations. Yeah.
All right, Zeus is disqualified at 321, which we'll get to in a second. Warlord pins Axe at 949. Barbarian pins Smash at 1341. The Powers of Pain are then disqualified as well at 1944. DiBiase pins Jake at 23:49, and then Hogan wins it, obviously, at 27:30. Now, the first, before we get to the major issues here, the first one is that the Powers of Pain, who are pretty much fading as a tag team at this point, really don't last long into 1990, pin the champions cleanly. So that was a little confusing to me.
I was about to ask if you remember, because I don't know, I don't really do. We might have to check Graham's site for maybe house shows and stuff, but I couldn't imagine them getting title shots again, maybe? I mean, that's the only thing I could think of as to why they would do that.
I think they just wanted a placeholder team to get between the Brainbuster feud and the next feud for them. But the confusing thing is, yeah, I don't know why they didn't maybe just do the double count out there. Well, I guess they wanted Powers of Pain in the match so they could do the other bullshit that they do. But yeah, I mean, I thought maybe they could have Zeus take out Demolition, but unless they knew he was leaving already, it seemed like they were still pretty invested in him at this point, so... Mm. I'm kind of surprised they didn't have him go over them. Or DiBiase could have pinned one of them. God forbid he gets a fucking victory on TV.
I feel it. I feel like the Emperor and he's Luke in the Return of the Jedi. I feel the hate is flowing in you.
It's definitely flowing.
I don't know. See, obviously my comments are pretty on the... And again, of course, you can follow along with us going to our site, bigelow34.proboards.com. The link is actually on the historywwe.com, the written... when it gets posted, you'll have the written review will be right there as well for you to link to, so you can kind of follow along with us. You know what? Go ahead. I'm going to let you go.
Right.
Like you did for me with the Lakers in Dallas. Go ahead. I'll back you up. Go ahead. I'm pulling the ripcord. It's all yours. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I mean, I don't get why Hogan really needed to squash DiBiase to win this match. They were running out of heel challenges at this point. Savage had already been buried. Zeus obviously was not the answer at this point. DiBiase, he had some heat, was an easily investable character. Jake was back. Now, I know they had the Jake DiBiase feud going. Wouldn't it make more sense to maybe have, since Hogan really wasn't involved in a feud here, he's not feuding with DiBiase. The Zeus thing is kind of Why not have Zeus take out Hogan, with a chair or something, then DiBiase puts him out with the sleeper, and then you have DiBiase Jake as the hot final to really push that feud going into WrestleMania. DiBiase steals the win, and then you really have a lot of heat on that feud. I don't get why he needed this win. Throughout this year, he buried Macho Man, DiBiase, and he would eventually bury Mr. Perfect as well as we get into early 1990. Even more bullshit is during the match, and I agree with Jesse here. First, Zeus gets disqualified because he keeps choking Hogan. And then the Powers of Pain are just kind of double teaming him. And I think they accidentally bump Earl or Dave or whatever the fuck stupid Hebner was in there. And then they get DQ'd together. So that was bullshit as well. And Jesse is just tremendous in this match, just flipping out, saying Hogan's been saved. You know, the referee is in his pocket. He's paid him off. And it was, I mean, it really seemed that way to me watching it. I don't get why they were DQ'd. I don't get why Zeus had to be DQ'd. It just really looks stupid. It really did look make Hogan, even in Hogan's defense, it made him look weak to me. Like, this champion had to be saved multiple times by the referee. And it, I know they're trying to build some sympathy, but Jesus, you know, just, I don't know. The whole thing is very, very aggravating. Even now, even 22 years later.
And you know, just as a side reference, in my comments, I actually say, when I wrote this, I said, now 16 years later, you say, would it hurt for DiBiase to win? So it tells you a lot when we actually wrote the original review.
Right.
So it was...
and he poses at the end anyway. So, you know, he could have done that anyway.
Yeah.
Just like he did at 87 Survivor Series. You know, that made sense a little bit, because at least he put on, you know, they put somebody over. I don't get why he couldn't lay down for DiBiase here to put extra heat on the Jake DiBiase feud.
Exactly. And you just take a good team of heels. You know, I had nothing against the Powers of Pain. Still a good team. You know, I think losing to Demolition at WrestleMania did kind of kill their buzz a little
well,
bit.
Well, I mean,
but
that's another argument, too, for later when we get to the final, because I don't even understand why they were in this match.
Yeah, I mean, you could have put any other hot heel team at the time in there, or even just two more, maybe just to match them up with Demolition, but why bother, you know?
I think the Twin Towers probably would have been maybe a little more effective there, because then you kind of still play off the Hogan-Bossman feud as well.
Well, then you would have had to put Dusty in this match instead of Jake. And you could have had Hogan and Dusty against Boss Man. I mean, and of course would have been, and then of course Dusty would have had to lay down because, you know, this isn't Florida and Hogan gets what he wants.
Well,
and you really,
I mean, Savage
really could have gone off.
Yeah, well, Savage should have probably been in this match. I mean, to me, considering they were doing this, is why I was so confused as a kid watching the show, because, you know, Hogan's feuding with Savage still at SummerSlam and Zeus, and then during this match, and I'm going to play the promo in a minute, they're promoting No Holds Barred, the match, which is Savage and Zeus. So it was just very confusing why DiBiase was even involved here. If I were them, I would have had DiBiase be in the match prior to this with Jake. And then, yeah, you put Hogan, you have Dusty in this match, and then on the heel team, you got Savage, Zeus, and, you know, the Twin Towers, or, you know, whatever. But I think Savage and DiBiase should have definitely been flipped here, at least.
Mm. And, you probably could have added, well, play the promo, because if it's a promo I'm thinking of, and then I'll mention another promo, something else that happens on this show that kind of continues to fuel that fire. But go ahead and play the promo, because I want the listener, we want the listeners to hear it, and I'm going to go off from that. So go ahead and hit the promo.
Randy Savage, after the victory tonight, your thoughts must be on Wednesday night, December 27th, the movie No Holds Barred, then the match. You'll meet Hulk Hogan and Brutus the Barber Beefcake inside a steel cage team with the human wrecking machine. Zeus, a man you've had control problems with.
Control problems? I'm not worried about control problems. What they did to Zeus in that squared circle a little while ago, man, I love it, yeah, because in that big steel cage, 15 foot high around the ring, there are no holds barred. So the fact that I can't control the human wrecking machine, I love it, yeah. Zeus has been chosen by the scepter, yeah, to get rid of Hulk Hogan and Hulkamania. The end of the road, big 15 foot high steel cage, no holds barred, and Brutus the Barber Beefcake, you're guilty by association. So you must fall also, yeah. I'm talking, this is it. This is the end of the road, Hulk Hogan. This is the time that you don't escape. We got you there. That's all that matters. And we'll take you to the bank. We're not going to quit. That's bread of Hulk Hogan, yeah. Do you understand that, Hulk Hogan? Say goodbye to all the Hulkamaniacs, yeah. Chosen by the scepter, Zeus.
Let's go to Mean Gene Okerlund.
Yeah.
All right, we're back to the locker room with me right now, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, celebrating the Survivor Series victory for Hulk Hogan. Gentlemen, it's going to be a no-holds-barred Christmas, Wednesday, December the 27th, in a 15-foot-high steel cage. You two are going to be facing the human wrecking machine, Zeus, and, of course, the Macho King, Randy Savage, in a steel cage, Brutus.
Hey, well, cut my legs off and call us both Shorty Brother, Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Pulled his team through. They're survivors. The Hulkster's brother, the Maniacs. We proved that we're survivors. But on this no-holds-barred Christmas, brother,
I just want all the maniacs to know that it's different than any other cage match in the WWF. We're going out to win this match in this 15-foot high, 15-foot wide steel tempered cage. But we're also going out there, Barber, to put those two, the Macho King and the Zeus, out of the WWF. But after what went down out there tonight, Brutus, it doesn't seem like this might be our kind of match, brother. The way the human wrecking machine was choking me down, the way he went crazy, the way he was pushing his own team around, it looked like he could manhandle anybody in the arena. That's why, Brutus, you're going to have to keep the steel-tempered clippers close by the cage, brother.
I saw them take any armor tonight, Brutus.
Well, you know something, that Zeus, he was out of control, Gene. I saw him trying to virtually rip the head right from the Hulk's shoulders. He tried to tear his head.
Oh, wait a minute.
Right off.
Just a second. What are you gonna do when there's no holes barred?
What was that? My God, it's pandemonium in the locker room.
So pretty good stuff there, setting up the feud. And what makes it even more confusing though is the way they have Beefcake and Hogan being friendly. I don't get why they weren't on the same team to push No Holds Barred. So I was kind of thinking of what I would have done during that little promo there. I think that the team probably should have been Hogan, Beefcake, Dusty, and Duggan against Savage, Zeus, and the Twin Towers. That's how I would have done it. Because then you got the Duggan-Savage thing is in there, the Hogan-Savage thing, the Beefcake-Savage, Beefcake-Zeus, Hogan Boss. You know, everything kind of ties in, Dusty Boss Man. And then you could have had, you know, if you wanted to do the three survivors or the whatever, you could have done Dusty and Hogan surviving, or Hogan gets eliminated by Zeus, or, you know, double count out with Zeus, then you still have Dusty be the sole survivor. You know, however you wanted to do it. And then a demolition, I'll get to a minute where I would have had them, but I wouldn't have been here.
I must say, though, tonight, the promo playing Mothership, playing crisp and clean tonight. Very impressed.
Okay.
Excellent clips you played tonight. You actually took the words on. I was about to ask. I didn't realize you had those. That promo was piggybacked, because I was going to say, after the promo with Savage and Zeus later on in the show, or it would turn out to be right after, Beefcake and Savage, Beefcake and Hogan would have a promo, and then the Savage and Zeus would run in and attack them, and they'd have a big brawl in the locker room.
Yep.
So even a bigger, and of course, as you obviously just heard it, so an even bigger reason why this whole thing just makes no sense whatsoever. I it's almost like they were focused on the latter part of the show and the last match, and this one's like, all right, throw Hogan and a bunch of heels in there, and I don't know, have them win somehow. I don't know. I got other things to worry about. And okay, well, let's just DQ them all. Like, it was almost like it was almost like this match ended up being an afterthought instead of really being sat down and formulated properly into something that made some kind of sense. And you don't see that often with a Hogan match where something doesn't make any sense in terms of the booking going in. Sometimes the execution makes no sense, but even here, from the pre-production standpoint, it didn't make any sense, which is rare for them back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't drop the ball much on setting something up. They would, starting in 1990, things would start to get a little herky-jerky at times, but we're still in the cruising run of the rock and wrestling era and the hot 80s. So rarely did something that needed to be very important kind of get, would the ball get dropped. And it certainly dropped here. And I echo your fury and rage. It just made no sense. Now again, November 89, we're all still drinking the orange Kool-Aid, so we're like, yay, but we're not, this isn't then, this is now. And this is why we're here, to kind of
break it down. I mean, that's my bigger issue. None of it just makes sense. It just seems like counterproductive booking all along. And the only thing that comes out of it is at least the DiBiase-Roberts feud is pushed along, because Ted actually does pin Jake to eliminate him. So at least that's something, you know, to keep that feud going. But other than that, this whole match is kind of a mess.
Yeah, it is. It is. And Hogan wins, big shock, even though he didn't need to. Hell, why don't you have... You could have had keep the feud going, have Savage come out at the end and attack Hogan and Zeus, and then have DiBiase, you know, win with the, you know, have him hit him with the scepter, hit him with something, choke him out.
Right.
And then DiBiase, you know, ratchets up the $1 million dream and beats him. I mean, is it that big a freaking deal?
No, I know. Yeah, it's annoying how, you know, you couldn't touch him at this point.
Yeah. And it was, you know, it gets worse as we move along. This isn't the first time. We talked about it 2 years earlier at Survivor Series 87, but this one is really glaring, and trust me, it gets no better from here at times. Our next match is actually one of my favorite Survivor Series matches of all time, because these two teams are such a complete mess. It is awesome.
Yep.
You've got Rude's Brood. And come on, tell me, and I know you agree with me, and I hope all you fans do as well, the greatest idea in the history of WWE Creative, one of the greatest, was to actually give these teams names.
Yes, and Rude's Brood becomes arguably the best brood in WWF history, possibly second.
Yes, Rude's Brood, Rick Rude, obviously, Ravishing Rick Rude, former Intercontinental Champion, Mr. Perfect, already this team is one of the greatest, and the Rougeau Brothers, which immediately makes them one of Justin's favorite teams of all time.
And this literally may be, I mean, there's a couple more great heel teams coming in future years, but this is up there. It's just pure great heel and technical wrestlers. It's hard to beat this team right here.
And then you get to the other side of the coin, where you get one of the most hilarious clusterfuck tag teams of all time. Roddy's Rowdies. The team of Rowdy Roddy Piper. This is actually probably Matt Rotella's favorite team of all time. Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Fits right in, that's for sure.
Exactly. Rowdy Roddy Piper, Superfly Jimmy Snuka, and the Bushwhackers, Luke and Butch. Clearly.
All right, from Roots Bruins, they say they have problems. You can hear them coming now. Roddy's, come on.
We are ready for bear. Come on. I can't stop them from eating.
Hold a second. Whoa, you can't. How many times have I told you? You can't have lunch till after the. After the match, you can have lunch. You see? But that's okay. After you see what we got is we got bone breakers here. We got people rude up there smiling and laughing and having a great time. Perfect. Easy boys. Don't eat nothing. Oh.
That's one of my great favorite promos of all time for a tag.
Yes, because you have no idea what the hell anybody is saying.
It's tremendous.
It's totally, absolutely right up our good friend Matt Rotella's alley. It's just perfectly him. Just four completely incoherent buffoons.
Piper singing while Snuka's whooping and the Bushwhackers are yaying is tremendous stuff.
And then the turkey comes out and they're ripping the turkey apart. It's a tremendous piece of television. And it fits. It's a good heel-face combo. You have four, you know, great baby faces just, you know, having fun and just being weird. And this very serious, very down the middle, straight on the vest, heel team of expert technical wrestlers. Mm-hmm. So maybe from an in-ring perspective, it may not be the prettiest.
Well, you know what, though?
Face of the earth, but
the faces, too, both teams do the other thing well enough as well. Like the heels all were could do a brawl. And the faces, while known for brawling, you know, they weren't bad at the technical aspect and the selling. Snuka, you know, he could work when you needed him to still. It was a very good seller. The Bushwhackers, I think, are very underrated sellers, actually. I thought they was always pretty good sellers. And then, you know, Piper, he could hang as well. So, you know, Piper, you had four brawlers, but it's not like they were useless oafs, you know what I mean? They could work with these guys, which helped make this match even better.
Yes. We need to backtrack. Going back to April 8th, the world witnessed the transformation of longtime jobber, but actually, kind of a fan favorite, even in losing, Leaping Lanny Poffo, would become the Genius. He still did poetry, and he's still kind of a little light in the loafers. He was a little, you know, light in the hat. But he would wear a hat now. He would wear a mortar board, right? Is that the official name of it? Is that what the...
No, the mortar board is... Yeah.
Yeah, that's what the hat's called, right? The graduation hat, the mortar board, something like that. He would start wearing.
It's been a long time since you graduated, but
that is true. Yeah, exactly. I don't remember what Newt Rockne called it. He sat still right next to me. But anyway, he would become a heel. He would walk around in like the graduation outfit, the gown and the cap, and he would start reading from his hard metal scroll. And instead of being very happy, he'd be very demeaning, obviously ripping baby faces. And he would actually not wrestle as much anymore and become more of a manager. On May 15th, he would make his in-ring debut as the Genius, but most of his appearances throughout the summer would be pretty much just reading poetry before matches about various things going on in the company. The main event at SummerSlam, right before the Zeus, Savage Hogan, beefcake match, he would do a poem, as we mentioned in the last podcast, the last vault. On October 7th, on the Brother Love Show, he appeared and announced that he found a new protege to manage. And his manager, and he would take over the career of one, Mr. Perfect. And they actually would end up becoming a pretty good TV combination. You know, obviously two good wrestlers, but their chemistry together was outstanding, and we'll document that as we move along. But it was a great, it was a good hookup for the two of them. And that actually was the night that the unbelievably, incredibly, super stupendous, awesome, perfect theme music made its debut, and it would go down as probably one of the greatest entrance themes of all time.
Yes.
So, the match itself is actually very entertaining. I enjoyed it. Let's go through the eliminations. Snuka pins Jacques Rougeau at 4:01, then Piper pins Ray at 7:39. Perfect pins Butch at 10:44. Rude pins Luke at 12:14. Piper and Rude brawl out into the crowd and down the ramp, and they get eliminated about 18 and a half minutes in. And then finally, obviously, the two guys left, who do you think is going to win? Perfect pins Snuka at
now,
just
see,
under
though,
21 and a half minutes.
This was a perfect template of how the Hogan match should have gone. Mm-hmm. The main face gets, you know, has a feud going on. They get eliminated, and then you put the heel over the lower mid card guy. I don't get what was so hard. It was right in front of their eyes, right here.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we'll kind of lay it out because I'm curious to hear Justin's layout when we get to the analysis. But again, the match is fun. You hit the nail on the head. I mean, yeah, Piper, Snuka, and the Bushwhackers are not the brightest bulbs on the Christmas tree sometimes when it comes to general character, but we're not dealing with four schlubs here either. We're dealing with, you know, Piper's Piper, and as we'll see throughout the next couple of years, he's not a bad guy in the ring. We never knew that. We never discounted that. Snuka, as you said, this guy's a pro. He's been in the business a long time. Yeah, he's a little older, but he definitely could still run. And and Luke and Butch, when came to brass tacks, can work a match, you know, as well as they could. And you're obviously dealing with four expert technical guys on the heel side. So actually, they meshed fairly well, and it was actually a good flowing match. Really, no dead spots. They kind of moved along. The commentary is good. Jesse rips all the nut job faces.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, I liked it. I mean, I gave it a 2.5. It's not a 5 or anything, but it was an entertaining enough match.
It's a lot of fun.
It's a fun match. It's highly entertaining. Keeps the flow of the show going. It's nothing offensive. It was actually fun to watch, and I thought they would put this on Piper's DVD. I think it would have fit perfectly on it, but it's not. So. Yeah, that's pretty much it for me. And for this one, I like it a lot. It's funny. You know, it's not anything earth shattering, you know, work rate wise, but it's just a fun match to watch.
Now, there's an important plot point as well, as Bobby is not with Rude. And Jesse mentions that he finds it weird that Heenan didn't come out for this match because he always did. And then he said he hears that there's been some controversy backstage.
Yes.
In the Heenan family. So we'll find that out in the next match. But yes. I agree with you. You know, this wasn't any kind of masterpiece, but I think it was a lot of fun to watch. And the Piper Rude feud continues, and that would go in towards the end of the year on the house show circuit. I think they had their series of cage matches following this show, so
right.
That kind of capped things off there. Perfect, stay strong, gets his win. The Rougeau, sadly, are coming to their end, though. So, good stuff.
Yeah, though. Yeah, it is unfortunate. So, the funny, goofy, you know, Matt Rotella tribute team hangs as hard as they could, but they do lose to the hottest heel on the roster right now. It's almost like Perfect kind of lapped Rude on the heel side of the roster. Perfect seemed to really be showcased at the time. I'm not going to say overall, and we can debate this in the future, either you or I or some of our great listeners. At the time, Perfect was a better wrestler than Rude, I think.
Yeah,
Rude,
I think so.
Rude, I think Rude got better once he went to WCW. We'll get into that, obviously, down the line. But once he left and kind of sowed his oats in the early 90s, Rude became an excellent wrestler. But here, at this moment in time, Perfect just was the better overall package. And it made sense for him to get over and be the only one left standing. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So now, we've come to our main event. Why don't you paint the picture for us?
All right, and that main event features the Intercontinental Champion as the captain, and that's the Ultimate Warrior leading the Ultimate Warriors team with Jim Neidhart and the Rockers against the Heenan family, Andre the Giant, Haku, Arn Anderson, and Bobby Heenan. Now, of course, this was supposed to be Tully Blanchard in this spot, but he actually failed the drug test right before this show, so he was fired immediately, and Bobby replaces him. Of course, that's the controversy that mm-hmm. Jesse alluded to. So Bobby puts the tights back on here.
Yep. And it turns out that Tully would never be the same again. In essence, his career pretty much ended this month.
Yeah,
pretty
much.
Because obviously this is Arn Anderson's final WWF match. He goes back to He goes back to Mid-Atlantic, and by the time he gets there, it is, of course, no longer Mid-Atlantic or NWA. Right. It is pretty much WCW. And Tully, once the Crockett's found out, or whoever was booking Ole or whatever at the time, that Tully had failed his drug test, Ole was not brought back. So, in essence, in a great career, but in essence, Tully Blanchard's career ended here.
Yep.
And that's pretty much that. So, Bobby puts the tights on in pay-per-view for the first time in a year and a half.
No?
No, I'm sorry. And since WrestleMania 5,
yep.
Obviously, second time this year. Probably the last time, if I remember correctly, on pay-per-view. This is an interesting booking decision because the Ultimate Warrior is the showcase babyface here.
Right. You could tell they're definitely trying to flesh something out.
Exactly. So maybe Hogan getting a throwaway tag match and just beating the hell out of everybody was his shut the hell up and let this guy be the last match, please. I'm sure that's what that was, knowing him at the time. Go ahead. Go through the eliminations and then we'll flesh it out.
Yep, Andres counted out at 27 seconds. Haku pins Jim Neidhart at 3:29. Bobby pins Marty Jannetty at 8:48. Of course, he didn't do that by himself.
No.
Sean pins Haku at 12:54. Arn pins Sean at 15:36. And then Warrior takes out Arn at 18:16 and then finishes Bobby off at 20:26. So, I mean, I kind of liked having, as much as the match would have been better with Tully, the heat-wise and storyline-wise, it's actually kind of better with Bobby in it because it caps off the year-long Warrior-Heenan feud that had been going on. Now this is one of the matches I would have flipped around. I would have had Demolition here, because they really weren't feuding with the Powers of Pain anymore, but they were set to feud obviously with two guys in this match, and that's Andre and Haku. And they also had issues with the Brainbuster. So to me, they fit more with Warrior anyway. So I would have had Warrior, Anvil, and Demolition, and Anvil kind of gets a little main event bump here as well.
Exactly. Obviously the first thing to notice here is it is clear without question that Andre just can't do it anymore. He the match at WrestleMania 5 was not great. He didn't do that much at SummerSlam. Boss Man and Hakeem did most of the work in that match. And obviously here getting counted out, he barely even.
Well, that was the finish going around the circuit. And of course, remember the match that Jordan Duncan made up that he imagines he saw was Warrior.
That's right.
But no, they really were going around the circuit at this point, doing under a minute where Warrior would just pin him quickly or Andre would get countered out. So that was the feud going around right now.
Right. And again, Andre gets one last moment in the sun, and we'll get more to that when we get to our next, when we open the vault again. But you got good workers though in this match. I mean, you've got Haku. I mean, I love the work guys in this match.
Yeah, Arn and Haku.
I love
is a
Haku.
Cool little team.
Arn.
Too bad Arn didn't stick around. They could have worked well together.
I think it would have been great. Arn and Haku teaming with and maybe, but yep. You know, Andre deserved a little gold at the end. But we'll get to that later. We'll get to that in the next show. Yeah, Arn and Sean. You know, it's I just love the combinations in this match. Just such uniqueness. Obviously, guys are not at their peak yet.
And Arn hits Sean with a very nice spinebuster. I remember.
Yes.
Or
yes.
Marty, one of the two of them takes that. I think it's Sean.
I think it's Sean, if I remember correctly. I think it is. But obviously, one of my favorite moves of all time, the double A spinebuster. Now, of course, when he's wrestling, used extensively, of course, by my favorite guy, Triple H. But not having Tully is kind of odd. But you know what, Bobby? This is another case where the guy just deserves all the credit in the world. He's already in the Hall of Fame, and he deserves it. The guy... You know, he's the one that got screwed here because, you know, his match was set, booked and everything. And then, of course, you know, Tully had to do one too many lines of blow and got fired. So they really had no other answer. They could have had somebody come out that was already, maybe they could have had Rude wrestle again if they didn't have the match right before that. Maybe they could have had Rude do double duty or something. Instead, Bobby's like, you know what? I'll do it. Put the tights up, make a jackass out of himself and get the win. And then, Warrior gets the win. And, of course, Warrior and Bobby would have their little weasel suit matches, which I think would be through 1990.
No, that was the summer.
It was earlier,
yeah,
right?
This ends their feud here.
Okay, that's what I figured. That's what I thought. I thought it was before that. The work overall I like. I actually like this match a lot. I didn't grade it high because, you know, from just an objective point of view, it's not the best on the earth. It's not terrible, but it's not great. But for personally, just as a fan, I'm entertained by this because I just love the workers. I love Haku. I love Arn. Even Neidhart's got his boots on. And of course, The Rock. I just love everybody in this match.
I like the end, too, with you know, Arn gets pinned by Warrior, but Bobby's like, I think he's like down in the apron or on the floor, and he doesn't realize it. So he wakes up and just sees Arn walking off, and he gets on the turnbuckles yelling at him to come back, and Arn just kind of says, like, F you, I'm leaving. And then Heenan slowly turns around and sees Warrior standing there, and then Warrior just beats the shit out of him. And then even after the match, when Heenan's stumbling to the locker room, Warrior runs from behind and clotheslines him in the back of the head and then keeps going. So,
well, what you forget is Arn's in the ring, just to preface that, Arn's in the ring for a good heat portion of the match.
Right.
He finally gets a tag to Bobby. Arn wants a breather. Bobby turns around 10 seconds later and tags him.
That's right, yeah.
And Arn looks at him like, what the fuck, man? I've been in here for like 10 minutes, you know? So there was, you could tell that was just the whole way that you knew that that whole dichotomy was going to collapse anyway. It was just a question of, first it was Tully, and then, of course, it wasn't there. But
yeah, they had a good run, the Brainbusters.
They did. One of my favorite teams of all time. In fact, there's actually, on the Saturday's Main Event DVD right before this show, which is probably why these two teams were in here together, Brainbusters and the Rockers actually had a 2 out of 3 falls match on Saturday Night's Main Event the week before the show. Obviously, this is a showcase for the Ultimate Warrior, the Intercontinental Champion. I'm sure Hogan didn't mind getting an early night. I'm sure he didn't stay.
Right.
I'm sure he was gone. I'm sure he was well out the door in Chicago after his match, and of course the fracas with Savage and Zeus. So this was Warrior's moment to shine, and he succeeded. And I think now you start realizing, I think after the, do you think that, you know, we've been talking so far about how they were still thinking about Zeus in the main event, but do you think by now they pretty much realized that this was their other guy?
I think they knew they were prepping him for something major. I don't know if they knew yet. I don't know when they knew that they were doing Hogan Warrior. I think I've actually read that Dave Meltzer said by this point they knew what was going on. So I don't know how legit the Zeus thing is, honestly. I mean, it just kind of, it could be one of those old RSPW you know, stories back in the day that were always floated around. So, and perpetuated by our buddy Scott Keith throughout the late 90s.
Yes. And along with the whole Savage Stephanie thing, which I'm not going to talk about on air, but I got something to tell you off the air about that. Maybe I'll talk it to our closer friends, but it was just a great moment, and Bobby, as usual, a perfect foil, and a good end to the show. It was actually nice to see a different ending, and you wished, and now looking back, you wished that Savage got this at the end of WrestleMania 4, that he had the stage all to himself, and he didn't have to deal with sharing it with the Goblin, to steal a quote from Scott Keith, the Orange Goblin. Here, Warrior got his moment alone. And I think Vince was probably standing in the back in Chicago going, I think I got my idea.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have my Sunday night in April in Toronto. But that's the capper to the show. And a great moment to end and a good happy highlight. And the fans went home happy without having to see 20 minutes of posing. So there you go, folks. The 1989 Survivor Series. Now, we seem to have liked this show a lot, but if you had to look at it from just a pure show quality in terms of, you know, work rate and just overall effort, I gave it a C. It's really hard to grade it any higher than that.
No, I mean, it's a great nostalgia show.
Mm.
You know, if you love that time period and you love the guys in that time period, but there's not much going on storyline-wise. And the stuff that does happen doesn't have anything to do with the storylines going forward. So, yeah, I mean, it's a fun three. You know, if you're laying around on a Sunday afternoon and you want to watch some classic wrestling, go throw the show in. If you're looking to watch, you know, interesting storyline advancement or historical shows, this probably isn't the one for you.
No, no. And I think after listening to this podcast and then throw the show in, we are not held responsible for anything you throw across the room while you're watching the Hogan match, wondering, Jesus Christ, these guys are right. So we take no responsibility for anything you break. But yeah, I agree with Justin. You know what? If you're in the mood to watch some good promos, actually the promos in the show were tremendous.
Yeah. Yep.
The promos are highly entertaining. The matches are, you know, they're all right. You know, it's good to see new blood like Earthquake, and obviously Perfect. Except for Hogan, everybody that survived deserved it.
Right.
From Savage and that crew of heels to Warrior to Perfect to Dusty, they all deserved being last in their matches. It's just the Hogan match that's just a complete conundrum and makes you rattle your head and go, huh? You know, you just don't get it. The other four matches in the show, logic-wise, maybe not matchups-wise within the teams, but results-wise, all made perfect sense.
Yeah.
It's just the Hogan match. You have to shake your head and go, this was stupid. So we recommend, you know, if you don't have, if you're a completist like him and I are, get it. I recommend getting it on eBay because a lot of people just have it dubbed on a regular VHS tape and they won't charge you anything. I think I paid like $7 for mine. And I actually got two on one. I got that and I got the show we're going to do next on the Vintage Vault, which is the 1990 Royal Rumble. I have that. I have those both on one tape. So I got mine for like nine. I think it was like $8. If you go to Amazon, you're going to end up getting the Coliseum video copy. And if you can get it cheap, tremendous. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you will, though, because those are, you know.
Oh, I think this is aired. You know what? It's airing this month, actually, on 24/7.
Oh, so if you have Classics on Demand, tape it.
Yeah.
And you're all set. Yeah. And, of course, let us preface. I apologize. I had said that these matches aren't on DVD. That's wrong. There is the Survivor Series anthology.
Right.
They do have the first, what is it, five shows?
I think so,
yeah. I think it's 87, first six. I think it's 87 to 92. And that's only, I don't think they did the right? They just did one digipack, I guess they're called.
I think so, yeah. I don't think they did the whole thing.
I don't think they did. I know they didn't do the whole thing. I wasn't sure if they did a second one through 97. I don't think they did. So you can get, let me rephrase that. If you're looking at individual matches, the only one on DVD is the Dusty match. It's on his DVD. The whole show, you can either get on tape. You can get the old school Coliseum video copy, or you can get the digipack of the Survivor Series anthology, which is 87 to 92.
Of course,
I don't know. I just want to preface. I don't know if Jesse is blotched out of those, though.
No, I don't think he's off the full shows.
Okay.
Yeah, I think if anything that's a release of something that aired already, I think is okay. Like, if the show, you know, as a whole had already been released, and now they're re-releasing it, it's fine. I think it's when it's considered, like, a new production, like the Dusty DVD. That's when they need to pay him additional. So, you know, sometimes they splurge, like, the history of the World Championship DVD and those, and sometimes they don't. So, you know, one thing we forgot to mention in the Hogan DiBiase match, obviously Jake is now back from his little kayfabe injury / legal issue. So that feud is kicked back in gear. But we didn't mention that he did return. So
yes, yeah, he was in the match with Hogan, and he's back in the feud with DiBiase, and that percolates throughout the next few months. That Dusty DVD really irks you, doesn't it? I just want to put a side note because the lack of Jesse kind of kills the buzz of that DVD.
Right, I really wanted to like it, and the story's good. And then I was like, dig it, because, you know, I love that time period, those matches, and they get the WrestleMania 6 match, and that's all classic Jesse. That's all removed, and it just like took the steam out of me watching that DVD when, you know, one of the best part of all these matches is gone. And yeah, it is tough listening to Gorilla just, you know, not even talk to himself. He's just talking, and then the silence. So yeah, it does hurt it. You know, that DVD I think could have been a little bit better.
Yeah, the documentary is very good. It goes into deep detail about you know, his life and obviously the issues he had with Dustin during the Goldust run, and the documentary part is good. The matches, a lot of them are good. There's a crap load of promos. I mean, it is Dusty. Mm-hmm. Dine to dine with kings and queens and slept in Atlas and dined on pork and beans, living on the edge of a lightning bolt. You know, actually, the funny thing about that packaging was it had the little button on it, and it had it had four rotating promos. One was the living on the edge of a lightning bolt. The other was the wine and dine with kings and queens, slept in alleys, dined on pork and beans. There were two others. I can't remember what the other two were. I think one of them was the Hossman on the planet because I've saved this galaxy for you and me, something like that. When he was feuding with Flair in the end of '85, going into Starcade. It is a good DVD for that aspect. The matches, yeah, are a little bit of a the WWF matches, the NWA, and he had a couple. Obviously, the later WCWs, and obviously there's actually a hidden gem on that. There's an ECW match he had with Carino, actually in my home state here out in Danbury. I think it's Living Dangerously 99 or something. But anyway, we digress. Dusty's a good DVD. Get it. I think you'll like it, even though Jesse's out of the fun matches.
All right. What I wanted to do quickly before we move on, I'm going to read the feedback.
Okay.
And then I think we should do our year in review here. We'll just read our picks from the review we had done. So let me just quickly hit. We got a little bit of feedback regarding this show. Corey Ferreira, the third Survivor Series was like the first two. A good show would showcase the WWF's loaded roster. With so much classy talent, WWF had a lot of its major stars on the show. The show also cemented the main event push for Warrior and a good start to his build for Mania 6 after having him finally defeat the Heenan family. Hogan was finally able to end his long-running feud with Million Dollar Man and his Million Dollar Team. A big win for Savage's King's Court, disposing of the 4x4s led by Hacksaw and keeping Savage as the top heel. Though, unlike 87-88, the show lacked the big tag team fest, but still a good event from the classic Survivor Series. Jason Greenhouse. This pay-per-view was a low point of what was an excellent year for WWF. The star power was there, but the energy level and presentation wasn't. One of the high points of this pay-per-view was seeing how good Bret Hart could work on his own or without Jim Neidhart. Unfortunately, he got thrown on Hacksaw's team of goofballs. As good as this pay-per-view was, within a few months, WWF does get back on his feet. And, well, I guess we'll just have to talk about it when we get there. Out of 4 stars, I give this pay-per-view a 1.5. So kind of divergent comments there from Corey and Jason. Mm-hmm. Karen Polland comes at us.
Oh, the hot Scott.
All right. This pay-per-view is
I don't know if he matches up with this team. I don't know if he's proud of my first team. He's not that crazy, but...
he's up there. This pay-per-view is pretty bland. I just can't get into it. It feels like a holdover show or an advert for No Holds Barred. I know Scott and Justin are going to call Hogan's head, but in his defense, DiBiase was kicking the shit out of him for ages in that match, which is true, Kieran. It nearly eliminated him with the $1 million dream. The best part of the pay-per-view is watching Bobby Heenan get his ass kicked by the Warrior. This pay-per-view is awesome because he gave us this promo, and that's from William Aaron Kenny, who gave us a link. He said, so much coke in the 80s, bad for your body, but sure, amazing for promos. And let's see which one. He's talking about a promo by the Ultimate Warriors team. So that is from our Place to Be podcast. A Place to Be podcast page. And we had a few comments here from the History of WWE page. Gerald Rosenberg, he said, I'm thankful because I ain't Ricky Rude. Of course, that's playing off Roddy Piper's I'm thankful comment in the open. And finally, Dave Hall. I loved several moments on this card. Bad news leaving his team for the second straight year. Good consistency from year to year, but made his teammates look stupid by not remembering. I really loved it in the final match when Arn Anderson yells at Bobby to stand in the corner and take the tag. Great moment of enforcer intensity. He really sold the issues between the Busters and Bobby. A demolition in the main event match is awesome, but why was this match in the middle of the card? It just makes the last two seem less relevant. So that's all the feedback we have on Survivor Series, and there actually is one comment. I think you'd like this one. Mm-hmm. It was on our Podbean page regarding SummerSlam 89, and that's from Robert Hoff. SummerSlam 89 is the first pay-per-view I bought with my own money, and in my biased opinion remains one of my favorite shows. I've been reading your reviews for years, but just found your podcast this week and now working my way through all your show reviews. When I moved from, fun fact, when I moved from Connecticut to Indiana, I lived 2 doors down from the Ultimate Warrior's mom. She was a very nice lady, but never wanted to talk about her son's career. Keep up the good work. So, cool little anecdote from Robert there. And I believe yes. You guys have something in common. Wasn't SummerSlam 89 the first show you purchased as well?
That is the first show I purchased in my house, yes. So, we bonded, yes. Good so, moment. Good moment.
Go. Cool. Cool facts, Robert. Thank you. So, what we'll do quickly now is we're just going to read through, starting in 89... because it was the first full year of all the pay-per-views. We started doing what we call the year in review. Basically, we just rank a top three for various things. So I'll go ahead and read them, Scott, and then you can just kind of see if you have any comments.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Right, so match of the year, our criteria, match is well-worked, had great psychology, told an excellent story, and gets the crowd rabid for the ending. Our number one WWF, and mind you, this isn't all of wrestling, this isn't TV, this is just our pay-per-view reviews. So every category here is based off the pay-per-views. Number one, we have Ultimate Warrior and Rick Rude from SummerSlam. Number two, we have Heart Foundations and Brainbusters from SummerSlam. And number three, Blue Blazer, Mr. Perfect from WrestleMania 5.
Yeah, couldn't really argue any of those. Those were easy for us. For those that have never seen it, and most wrestling fans have because you've seen the whole show, but throw in that Blazer Perfect match again. You'd be very surprised how good it really is for only, 5 minutes and 12 seconds or whatever it is. It deserved more time, and some of those other crap matches we talked about when we did that show deserved less. But, overall, those three matches, you really can't argue. Three best of the year.
All right, feud of the year. A well-written, long-lasting story arc that gets people generally interested for the matches. Feud should span multiple pay-per-views and have a genuine blow-off match to cap it off. The top feud should also be remembered for years to come. All right, number one, obviously, Hogan and Randy Savage. Mm-hmm. Number two, Rick Rude and Ultimate Warrior. And number three, Tito and Rick Martel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously, Hogan dominated those feuds. Warrior Rude, in my opinion, was a better feud because it seemed to be had more juice when it got to the end. Maybe that's just me. Martel.
You got to factor in the Mega Powers part, though.
Well, that is true, too. That is true, too. Maybe I'm just thinking of a happier ending. I don't know. They went along pretty well. I just had a soft spot for Rude Warrior. I just always love that feud. And Tito and Martel... just because more for the longevity than anything else, because obviously it was very one-sided, but
there weren't really a lot of other feuds. I mean, the only other one you could say is May Warrior Bobby, but that was pretty much intertwined through Warrior Rude.
Yeah.
You know, Jake and DiBiase hadn't really had much interaction yet on pay-per-view, so that one was kind
of... And you know what's really funny is that Demolition and the Brainbusters didn't even really have a feud. It's like, Brainbusters beat them, they both floated around, and then Demolition beat them back.
Yeah, you know, the pay-per-views are really almost independent of TV sometimes during these years. Yeah, you'd think they would have done something with Demolition, Brainbusters, and SummerSlam. This is very odd. Booking. So, okay, Wrestler of the Year. This wrestler who put on his best pay-per-view matches on the most consistent basis. The wrestler not only carries himself well, but his character, his story, and his opponent to great heights as well. This wrestler brings it at all his pay-per-view appearances. So, number one, we had Ultimate Warrior. Number two, Hulk Hogan. Number three, Rick Rude. So, for everyone who says we bitch at Hogan all the time, we did give him props here. He had a pretty good pay-per-view year. You know, his match with Savage was great, and his match at SummerSlam was pretty good, too.
But
Warrior,
you know,
obviously had the best two matches.
Right,
so.
And you know what? The Survivor Series debacle probably put him at number two instead of at number one.
Well, I don't know, because I don't think anyone was top. I don't think he was top of Warrior. Two great matches with Rude, the very good pose down segment, and then, you know, a pretty good match here as well. So I think he was definitely pay per view Wrestler of the Year.
Anyway.
And Rude obviously gets number three because he was involved in all the same shit as Warrior. So.
Yeah, pretty much. So. Yep.
All right, non-MVP. This wrestler was given a solid push over many more deserving wrestlers and failed at a hole. He blew the matches he was put in and his story sputtered. Even if it was given high-profile matches and a lot of TV time, this wrestler simply blew it. Number one, we have Zeus. Number two, Big John Studd. And number three, Andre. Poor Andre. But, at this point, it wasn't really his fault that he's non-MVP, but he was put in a position to fail most of the time.
Yeah, and I actually kind of feel bad putting Big John Studd there as well. I don't think that the bookers truly understood the magnitude of his health issues. So having him win the Rumble was probably just ill-advised because it was just not planned properly. But Zeus was the big bomb. But to be honest with you, I don't know what they were expecting. I mean, the guy had never wrestled before. He was an actor. You saw at SummerSlam, Savage had to whisper everything in his ear. I mean, I don't know what they were expecting out of him. But you know what? That's how the cookie crumbles. He definitely was expected more and didn't deliver it. But and we don't put codicils or qualifiers on our top three when we do this. But really, Zeus just—I don't know what they were expecting.
Right,
he wasn't a wrestler, so simple as that. But unfortunately, he did get the biggest push on TV, and just it didn't deliver as much as they wanted it to.
So the Gut Screwed Award. This wrestler deserved way more than he was given. He was an excellent all-around worker, strong character, but was held down for what could be a plethora of reasons, mainly backstage politics. This wrestler is usually associated with a big what if, and we gave this one to Randy Savage, just for the way he kind of tapered off. Maybe he could have won at WrestleMania, lost at SummerSlam, or maybe get a bigger rematch at SummerSlam, and then he's kind of shunted down the card for Survivor Series, and also a victim of circumstance at the Rumble. So could have been a lot more to his year, unfortunately, than what he did get.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have much more to say. It's pretty much, I agree as well. Did the best he could with what he was given, and, you know, performed admirably. By the end of the year, he was pretty much kicked down the card, really for no reason, so.
Save the day. When things were looking down and bleak, this man came to save the day and turned a potentially bad situation to a very good one. We give this one to Bobby Heenan and the Heenan family. Bright spot on the heel side, main event-wise. All the stuff with Rude. Andre had some high profile. Even Haku had a pretty good year. So, and Bobby's promo work and you know, all around work was good. And we also gave them the heel of the year as well, Bobby Heenan and the Heenan family. So
yeah, they pretty much carried things on the mid-card while Savage was still involved with Hogan. With the combination of Rude and the Brainbusters, Bobby's crew pretty much carried the mid-card throughout the whole year and definitely deserved this award. They did a heck of a job. And you're dealing with professionals. Rude, Arn, Tully, you're dealing with pros. So for Bobby, it was a no-brainer. He had great guys to work with, and they helped carry him through the summertime and into the fall.
Right, and face of the year, Ultimate Warrior. I think we've said all there is to be said about him.
Yeah.
Holy shit moment, a moment that was totally unexpected at the time, even if hindsight shows it wasn't. This moment usually has a major impact and is remembered for years to come. The moment was expected. It exceeded expectations. It became more memorable than originally thought. Mm-hmm. Number one, Rick Rude winning the IC title at WrestleMania 5. Number two, the returns of Roddy Piper and Jimmy Snuka. And number three, Ultimate Warrior main eventing Survivor Series instead of Hogan. One that we're kind of forgetting here, actually, that maybe instead of the Piper Snuka thing, was Hogan being eliminated at the Rumble.
Yeah, that was probably a shock, too. At the time, you probably assumed he was going to win to propel him to the title match with Savage at WrestleMania. It probably would have made Savage even angrier, and they didn't do that. But I don't think a single person expected Rick Rude to win at WrestleMania 5. I don't think, except Jesse. That's pretty much it.
Right.
So clearly, that's definitely number one. Ultimate Warrior main eventing Survivor Series instead of Hogan, like we said, like we put in our description, even if hindsight shows that it wasn't a surprise, and it wasn't, Warrior was hotter, Hogan didn't need anything at the moment, you know, give him something somewhere else and he'll be fine, he'll be happy. He's still the champion, so he didn't have to complain about that. So hindsight, him main eventing Survivor Series wasn't that big a deal, but at the time, it was kind of different, you didn't see that very often. But yeah, the Hogan getting eliminated at the Rumble was a big deal because I think after Savage got eliminated in the way that they ended up booking through to WrestleMania, you expected Hogan to win the Rumble.
Right.
But Rude winning it at 5 was definitely a shock because I don't think anybody thought he had the chops to actually become Intercontinental Champion.
To go along with the Hogan thing, we could put Hogan not winning and Big John Studd winning.
Yeah. Yeah, because that came out of nowhere. Who had seen Big John Studd anywhere after 1986?
Right.
You know? And then just come out of nowhere and win the Rumble? Yeah, that was kind of odd, too. That was kind of a shock.
All right, Tag Team of the Year. This team was extremely over with the fans, worked high-profile matches, and dominated the tag title scene for majority of the year. They set the standard for tag wrestling. Also, while help to be champions is not necessary, is this team would be over enough that they didn't need them. Right. Number one, obviously, is Demolition. Number two is the Brainbusters, who had a very, very good year. Yeah. And tie for third spot, Powers of Pain, Hot Foundation. Both had their peaks, both had their valleys throughout 1989.
Yeah, no doubt Demolition. They carry the torch and they carried it when the year started. They'll be carrying it as the year ends and into the next year. So no doubt Tag Team of the Year.
Comeback of the Year. This wrestler either A, had a terrible prior year and turned things around to have a monumental one, or B, was not present in the Federation in the prior year and made a huge debut return. This winner made a difference. So we also kind of counted as maybe a guy lower on the card that makes a big step up.
Mm-hmm.
And number one, we give that to Rick Rude. Number two is Rick Martel, and number three is Brutus Beefcake. So all three of those kind of fit that criteria. Martel was more injury comeback, but Rude and Beefcake, guys that were kind of, you know, aimless in the mid card in 88 and in 89, they really stepped up to be major players.
Yeah, Beefcake being put in with Hogan definitely does it for him. Mm-hmm. And Rude, when obviously, you know, guy was Intercontinental Champion. There's no doubt about that. So
I think we can pretty much say 89 was the year of Warrior, Rude, and Heenan. I mean, those are the three guys that really are the you know, it's funny because the Mega Power is such a dominant storyline. But to me, when I think of this year, I think more of Warrior, Rude than I do of Hogan, Savage.
I do too. I think it's the two matches. And for me, it's because my favorite match of the whole year was Warrior Rude at SummerSlam. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's the match that I'll always remember that year from. So I think the mid card deserves a lot of credit in 1989. It really helped carry the year because you just had some great characters and good wrestling too.
Yeah, so they definitely had a lot of good talent. So Diva of the Year, we give that to Sensational Sherri. I mean, at this point it was either Sherri or Liz. It definitely wasn't gonna be Rock and Robin. So
we went
Sherri. Guilty Pleasure Gimmick of the Year. Now this is Scott and I just kind of trying to agree on the one, you know, maybe gimmick that wasn't meant to be taken seriously that we felt was the best of the year. We picked the Fabulous Rougeaux's All-American Boys gimmick. So that was one of our favorites.
Love the theme song. Love the little flags. Love, loved Luke playing with the twig and berries at WrestleMania. But just, you know, they you look at them and you laugh. And again, we're not saying that they're bad. And we don't. Let's qualify this by saying just because something's a guilty pleasure doesn't mean they have to be crappy either. Right. I mean, we know, obviously, we've documented the Rougeaux's are an exceptional tag team.
Yeah, it's just a gimmick that we really loved.
Yeah, yeah. So, and the theme song was great. So,
all right. Breakthrough debuts of 89. This is guys who made their first pay-per-view appearance this year. Ronnie Garvin, the Bushwhackers, Mr. Fuji, Dusty Rhodes, Jimmy Snuka, Zeus, and Earthquake. And then finally, we have we ranked the shows based on our cumulative grades that we had given them in our review. So number one was SummerSlam, number two is WrestleMania, number three was Survivor Series, and four was the Rumble. And for overall, we give the year a B-. So that wraps up our year in review for 1989 and Survivor Series 89. Anything else you wanted to discuss about the show before we wrap up?
No, I just want to preface you. A lot of our listeners are probably wondering why we didn't do this for the other years. It's probably because there just wasn't enough shows. I mean, it's kind of hard to do a 1987 year in review when you only had two shows.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So we'll do this from now on. After the Survivor Series of that year, or in some cases, obviously, when we head into the middle of the 90s and we get to the December pay-per-views, obviously, when we do those shows, we will piggyback it with the year in review for that year. So expect those now when we do a Survivor Series through 94, and then obviously 95 when the December shows start.
And if we think it's going too long, what we'll most likely end up doing is just doing a separate little piece maybe and tacking it on as like a 37A episode or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. If it seems like a show is getting too long, which what we hope won't happen. It depends on the December show. And usually the Attitude Era and even into the 2000s, that shouldn't be a problem. But yeah, we'll either do a little piggyback epilogue or we'll stick it at the top of the next one. But just to let you know, we didn't do it before 89 because there just wasn't enough shows. Mm-hmm. We probably could have done it in 88, but it was still a little choppy at the time. We decided to start in 89 when the mid-card and everything was really, really cooking. Because right. Who wanted to watch, who wanted to talk about Year in Review? You could have put the guys that blew it award and could have put half the roster.
Yeah.
Morocco and our man there, hairless Patera there, and that would have been ugly. This was the first year where, in the pay-per-view era, where just everything from top to bottom cooked. From the main events to the tag division to the mid-card, just everything cooked in 89. And that's why we started the year in reviews here and not earlier. And from here on out, we'll be doing year in reviews on the last show of the calendar year.
Yep.
So just wanted to let everyone know that. But otherwise, I'm done. I'm finished. It's a great show. It's fun. It's nothing to take totally seriously. Don't expect
right.
crazy work rate. Just funny tag teams and actually very, very good promos. It might be one of the best from the opening promo of the show to the end. It might be one of the best promo laden pay-per-views of the first 8 years of the pay-per-view era. So the promos are probably better than the matches as a whole, but that's up to you to decide.
Right.
I recommend watching it. It's fun.
Yep.
It's a fun show.
Oh, so yeah, one of my favorites, like I mentioned, early rental favorite. So we will wrap things up there for now. We should be back later this week. We're planning either maybe doing a little bit of headlines, and also we got some cool ideas from some of our Facebook members, so we're going to try and run through those over the next few weeks as
yep.
well. Next week, just to give you guys a heads up, it's probably going to be a short week. We're going to try and get a vault in. I'm actually going to be on vacation starting this weekend through the middle of next week. So we're going to try at least to get a vault in next week. We'll do what we can to keep bringing you the goodness. So
yes.
We will go ahead and wrap things up. Of course, my PIC, Scotty C. I am Justin Rosero, and thanks for listening.
Peace.
Thank you.